Rebecca.
And I'm Krabeshni.
And welcome to Building with Builders.
Our podcast where we believe that building is fun.
Super fun.
So much fun.
Build Her Collective was created to help women with building and renovating. And we believe that with the right tools, everyone can build. For us, it's all about encouraging women to take back control of the building process and really achieve their dreams.
We are women in the building industry, and as developers, builders, and project managers, it's our passion to share everything we know with other women doing the same. And that's why we've created this podcast for you.
So if you love all things building,
you're into design,
keen on the numbers,
about to renovate,
thinking and dreaming of that forever home and what it would look like,
or even developing for profit,
then you've found your family.
Subscribe to our podcast and follow our journey over at buildhercollective.com.au.
Hello, lovely builders and developers. Welcome to today's podcast. So today we're talking to Corey from Rubik's Cube. Now, he has just sold an amazing house. It was Pascoe Vale, wasn't it?
Yes, Pascoe Vale.
And we've been kind of chatting a bit, and I thought I'd get him on the podcast, and we'll make it kind of quick, but to have a quick chat to him about what makes a good relationship between a builder and a client or someone who's looking to build their own home and a builder, and how you can get that relationship working really well, because ultimately that's the, you know, that's make or break, and you're going to spend maybe 1 or 2 years of your life with this person kind of traveling through this build, sometimes less, maybe 6 months, but so it's a significant amount of time to, I guess, jump into bed with someone when you've just looked at a tender and a couple of dollars on a page. You really need to make sure that the relationship is equally weighted, I would say.
Well, you say 1 or 2 years. I tend to say probably a lot longer than that. Obviously, warranty periods and everything else, defects. Yeah, the relationship, I think, you know, 1 or 2 years is where the brunt of it is, and you want to make sure that that's right, but you want to still have that relationship if anything were to go wrong, and I think that's very important as well.
Yeah, you're exactly right. So builders are generally structurally, you know, liable for 10 years, but most defects will happen in the first six months. But, you know, heavy storms generally bring up things. They can bring something, you know, a leaking window to head 5 years after it's been installed.
Of course.
If the water's never run in at that angle, probably won't again, but sometimes.
We had an earthquake the other day, and I know that the initial effects of that may not be a builder issue, but it may have some issue down the line, and you've got to make sure that, you know, you've got that relationship that you can at least bounce back ideas and solve problems rather than become, you know, confrontational.
Yeah, so I guess what we'd like to do today is maybe give people a little bit of background, a couple of minutes on your pathway. Now, I know your pathway into being a builder was from being a conveyancer, right?
Well, so my pathway is not the conventional apprenticeship, tradie, chippy, electrician. I'm actually a lawyer by trade, and initially started doing that and sort of found that that wasn't for me. I mean, I sort of had a midlife crisis at 25, probably one of many I'll have in years to come. But yeah, sort of found that, you know, that lifestyle wasn't for me and wasn't for my family. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do until I sort of fell into building later on when we were building our first home with my wife. And sort of loved it at that stage. Now, I didn't quite leave law on its own. I did start a conveyancing practice, which is still running. It's about 8 years now.
What's the name of that conveyancing practice?
Just for KLG Group Conveyancing.
KLG Group Conveyancing.
Correct. So we've been running for about 8 years. And, you know, funny, it's funny how the world works, where you start off at high school and try and work out your life and you're doing a million and one things. But I found that building sort of tied everything all together. Got a background in law. I've worked at, you know, the big four banks before as well. So most of all of that experience is now doing very well for me in what I'm doing with building and developing.
Well, as a developer, most of it is working out the finance.
Correct.
We'll jump into that. We run a a developer's masterclass. So that's for women who are looking to build and develop. So Cora has decided, or graciously giving up some time to kind of give us some insight into what he does, and that's in the kind of private group. So if you are interested in that, get in touch with us. Otherwise, we're kind of, I guess, talking about you as a builder rather than a developer for today's podcast.
Well, yeah, look, it's something that, you know, we've been working on for now 3-4 years, and we're at the stage where we're potentially looking at client work on top of the work that we're doing. We're very happy with the work that we're doing, but it all comes down to, like you said initially, the relationship between client and builder. We don't build very many homes a year purely because, you know, we want to keep that relationship at a very good standard. But, you know, we want to make sure that we're doing the right things and trying to help our clients at the same time.
And so for people who are listening, they're like, oh, actually, I don't know what a conveyancer is and what they do. Do you want to just give a quick explanation into that?
What we tend to do is, when you are lucky enough to purchase a home or sell a home, put simply, we organise the paperwork to transfer property from your name to a buyer, or your name, you know, from the seller, from the vendor. So basically, that's what we do, the paperwork in between.
Yeah, and that could be a pretty straightforward process, yeah. Or it could be a pretty complex, arduous one. And I guess your experience with that would have seen a lot of people having issues with builders along, and what some of those relationships, breakdowns, and how they would sit would be.
Yeah, of course. And you know, there's always the extreme cases and the straightforward ones. But, yeah, definitely you see some issues with builders and the work that they've done and you know, liability and risk and all that sort of stuff. So very important for anyone looking to build, to engage a builder, and just knowing, so obviously, your rights. And also when you're selling as well, responsibilities for yourself. If you've developed a property and used a builder, what falls on you, what falls on the builder, and all these sort of things.
Yeah, so that's really, it's amazing how it always comes down to this, about clarity and communication and what everyone's personal understanding is of the situation. Because I don't know about you, but I seem to find, regardless of the paperwork, the issues happen when people don't understand what's in the paperwork, and so their expectations are not of what's being presented.
Of course, and this comes down to the detail when you're purchasing a property ready built within maybe the 7 to 10 year warranty period, whatever else, you still need that guidance. And my, you know, advice from that side would be, make sure that the people that you use are able to explain to you what your rights and responsibilities are and what sort of falls on yourself, to ensure that, you know, you're going to get the best advice and know what you can and can't do if something were to arise.
Thinking about that, it would be understanding, if you're building something that does have a building warranty on it, who the builder is, what their position is, how long the defects, any of those issues.
Yep.
If you're buying something off the plan, or if you're buying a new home, what are some key things that people can look out for?
Well, number one would be sort of clarity of inclusions. Obviously, when builders build, or, you know, developers build, what's on plan sometimes doesn't eventuate. What key differences can be made and variations that can be made that, you know, affect your rights and responsibilities. But definitely with regards to inclusions, very rarely do you have the opportunity when you're buying off the plan to impact on fixtures and fittings. So really understanding what you're getting as an end product is very important. And I think you definitely need some clarity on that. There's some contracts out there that are very vague with this sort of thing, and there's some very detailed inclusions depending on, you know, who's building and all those sort of things. So that's very important. And obviously, yeah, coming back to like the relationships, understanding maybe post-settlement, understanding the people that you need to get in contact with if things don't go, you know, to plan. And let's be honest, in the building game, you know, things can go wrong, and they usually do, but having a game plan to be able to rectify them is important.
They usually do, because we go through this teething process when we build, right? So the system hasn't been tested. And at that point, if you don't have good faith or trust in the builder, you can feel like, oh, they've done a crappy job. Well, that's not true. It's a brand new house, sometimes hasn't been, you know, hooked up and run through the paces. It hasn't had a hot day, which has let the aircon go, you know, rip, or hasn't had a cold day where you've pulled, you know, so you've got all these different things working in amongst themselves, and you might not have had a heavy rain, so you can't test these things until there's an event that comes up. So there's this teething process, and that's why defects is not 1 day or 2 days. It's like 6 months or 12 months.
Funny you say that. So normally in a house, obviously when you're building the Pascaval house, we've got about 3 or 4 showers, which is fair enough. And usually when you've got a family of four, there's probably one shower that's not used as often as possible. So I tend to, before, you know, settlement and handover, I tend to make sure, you know, kids use this shower for this week and just smash that shower and see how it goes, or, you know, the taps or whatever else. Because like you said, the teething problems, it's something as simple as an O-ring that goes wrong, for example, and you've got a small little leak which can cause damage down the line. But, yeah, like you're right, the first 6 months to a year is when all these sort of issues will arise. And usually after that, it sort of plateaus a bit, which is good.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to happen with kind of something like a car, because they've got this system and testing. It's exactly the same every time. But when you're talking about building, it's a combination of different people and different materials and different suppliers on every job, and all of them have their different parts. And so there is this kind of natural, you know, you talk about an O-ring, we've had that. We've had hot and cold, plumb to the wrong one. I think that's a common one as well. It's mildly annoying, but, you know, we've had a hot toilet before. I don't even know how that happened. you're kind of like, oh.
That's a pretty cool invention, by the way.
He made while he was plumbing that, I don't even know. But whatever mistake he made when he was plumbing that, obviously the pipes weren't live and there was no heating unit cooked up. So it's very obvious when the house is being used, because the heating, you know, system is on and the water's being fed into it with hot water, but it's not that obvious if it's a pipe that's not in use.
Yeah, of course. I mean, and again, like these sort of issues at the very high end of building and sort of, you know, lower spec homes, if you would, it happens all across the board. So again, it comes down to that relationship where, you know, you need to be able to get through to people and sort of get that repaired. And it obviously is going to get repaired. It has to. But there's a way of doing it where, you know, you can walk away from it thinking, all right, well, I've been looked after. Or you walk away from it thinking, well, is it going to go again? What do I do next if it doesn't? Is it going to be a reoccurring issue? So these are the sort of things that, you know, relationship. And that's the key word between, I think, builder and client, is relationship. And that's very hard to form, because the reality is you're probably meeting this person for the first time in your life. And whether you can judge all these things in a couple of meetings or whatever else is going to be difficult.
So what should you do? Should you maybe speak to people that have built with that builder before signing up? Most people will be building their home from scratch. So it's like they've got the relationship of the build and then they've got the after service. And so oftentimes builders can be really good in the relationship of the build, but then afterwards it's they're busy running other builds, and then you need to be made a priority as a warranty. And it depends how many projects they've got on as well and what their systems are.
From my experience, and one of the reasons why I got into building was because, you know, I honestly couldn't find that relationship with a builder that I thought that, you know, I could have that relationship with, know that I was being looked after, and obviously from a financial point of view, make sure that the project was going to be worth it. So hence why we went into our first project. But in terms of obviously trying to find that builder, referrals is always a good place to start, looking at past clients, all these sort of things, and having a chat to them. But I think the main one is, you know, trying to identify, for me, if I'm a client looking for a builder, I'm trying to find like-minded people like me. So if I'm someone that's pretty cool, calm and collected, you'd probably want that on the same side of your builder as well. And the reason being, like I said, things can go wrong. They always sometimes do. But if you can find someone that's on the same page with you, I think resolving problems are a lot easier, as opposed to someone who may be sort of highly strung and stressed out a lot. And I think that can strain the relationship. So finding someone that is like-minded, that is either, you know, of similar temperament is very important. But again, it comes down to, you know, how many projects they're running. Are they a volume builder? Are they sort of, you know, custom builder? But at the same time, there's big differences. And for example, for us, like we probably build our own projects throughout the year and we probably have time for one or two client builds a year. And that's purely because we are able to maintain that kind of service at that level. And so we won't go beyond that.
So there's a couple of things that come about that or that I understand from that. It's like you've got passion for building, you've got passion for getting better and kind of pushing the envelope. You are building for people not because you have to and you're trying to pull money out of it. You're building for people because it's what you do as a business and it supports that cash flow, does support development. So that's probably a good indicator of a builder as well if they've kind of got competing. The developments I always find seem to come second fiddle to the client jobs when you do that.
Yeah.
which is great from the client side. It's not as great from the developer side, I guess. But also you're understanding that kind of role and you're understanding how to work with people and you're not pushing beyond kind of capabilities or getting into a place where it's stressful. That level of build is actually really enjoyable. You get in a great flow, you've got trades, they're kind of rolling, you've got good efficiencies because you've got several trades, several projects, so your bricklayers are moving from one job to another, your concreters are moving from one job to another, but they're not solely reliant on you, so you don't have to source work to keep them happy. Like there's a really nice, energy or flow or rhythm about that type of building, which we enjoy as well.
And for me, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. It's that, you know, that enjoyment factor for me. And one of the reasons why I pulled myself out of, you know, a highly stressful environment, and building is still highly stressful. For me, it's enjoyable. So I get to work. I'm fortunate that a lot of my trades are friends that have been doing it for a while, acquaintances or whatever else. So I carry my trades like most builders do from build to build. But what that does is that environment that I walk into is, you know, it's like going to work with mates, for example, right? There's obviously a business side to it, but that enjoyment factor is there. And, you know, that's an experience. And I think that one of the biggest misconceptions that people have before they start building is, you know, they're always looking for, am I going to get stung by someone throughout this build? So trying to find someone that's not going to do that is very difficult. But then there's a cost to that as well. For example, you know, if you can find someone that you can work along with, they may not be doing too many, you know, projects a year. There's a cost element to it as well.
Well, you might have to wait a while as well. So they might not be ready for you to go right now, right this second. You know, you've got to fit in with their schedule because good people book up.
Correct.
And their phones ring and they're also selective about who they take on. So this is the flip side of it is, and I know we talk about this a bit, but it's presenting yourself in the best light to the builder as well. So you both know where you're going to be headed. And I guess coming to any relationship, so we will finish this up in a sec, but coming to any relationship with generosity and goodwill. So you're not feeling like anyone who comes to it and they're feeling nervous, so that pace of fear means that they're not trusting you, means that when they come at something, they're like, oh, are you trying to take advantage of me? And so that fear becomes really hard to manage in a build where actually the various stages of the build can feel really different and things that look like errors come to light at the end because that's the way things are built. But if you don't understand the process and you see gaps around the window, you don't understand what's happening, well, that's just not corked yet.
Of course.
But it doesn't look right.
No, it doesn't. And like I said, like for that reason, I mean, we're sort of, as you said, we're very selective of who we work with and the projects that we do. So, for example, if you come to me with a 3-4 unit site, I probably say, you know, quite politely, it's not for me. I tend to deal with, you know, family homes because there's an emotion behind it. But then it keeps me honest because I'm building a home for a family that possibly will live in there for 10 to 15 to 20 years for, or possibly for the rest of their life. So that gives me a sense of enjoyment if I can do that at a level that they're going to be pleased with. And for my own personal sake, to be able to do that, you know, at the highest level possible, because that then brings, you know, repeat business and all that sort of stuff. So that's very important. So we're very selective in that, and, you know, we won't shy away from that. We'll tell people up front, and you get it, and they don't understand it. And for me, obviously, I've set up my life where I don't need to take on a job purely because of the financial gain. I tend to think that money is a byproduct of good work. And if you can present yourself and do good work for people, then that sort of takes care of itself. And that's how we've been sort of how we started the business. And we'll continue on that, because I think we have been, you know, successful with that. And, you know, that's what we enjoy, and it gives us a good work-life balance.
All right. Thank you so much for talking to us today, Corey. I really appreciate it. And I think it's nice to hear from the builder's perspective or side what you're looking at for a build, and I guess what you're thinking about when you're taking on a project. And it's not always how much can I do and how much profit can I make. It's about emotional connection and pride and seeing people enjoy the work that you've done, because it is work. It's a lot of work.
Of course, of course. But I do thank you for having me. It's been a blast.
Thanks for listening to Building with Build Her. We'd love for you to spread the word.
For show notes, links and downloads and other awesome resources and freebies, head to buildhercollective.com.au. And don't forget, that's Build Her with an H-E-R.
And if you enjoyed this episode, it would mean so much to both of us if you could take a minute or two to leave a review.
And don't forget to subscribe so you can listen next time as we talk all things building and women making their mark in the building industry.